So here we are, Jeff. It is the first episode of the Tricorder Transmissions, and this week we are talking about...
The Man Trap.
Yes, The Man Trap. It is the first aired episode of Star Trek, the original series, and it's a pretty cool episode.
Yeah, it first aired on September the 8th of 1966. We're going to be watching the remastered version, of course, which aired on September 29th of 2007. So almost 6 years ago.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the remastered run is they didn't release them in the order that they were originally broadcast.
Yeah, you know, that was a strange thing. I have to look that up. I've never really read up on the choice of running order for the remastered episodes. I'm wondering if they intended to only do a few, or they eventually planned on doing all of them, or... they did them in popularity order or what?
Yeah, it might have also been what was the easiest ones to do, the ones that needed maybe the least amount of work.
Good call.
Yeah, so if people haven't listened to episode zero, you can go ahead and listen to that. But real quick, before we get started, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version of what we're going to be doing here every week. We're going to be providing what we think is a kind of unique take on the Star Trek podcast. We will be providing scene-specific commentary tracks for every episode of Star Trek, the original series.
You can either watch along with us. We'll give you a quick three count, a three-down count, and you can start your episode along with us and watch and listen to our commentary. Or it works just fine as a regular audio stream as well if you just want to listen to what we're talking about.
Yeah, that it does. And there are quite a few ways you can watch Star Trek, the original series. You can watch on Blu-ray. They have put out the entire series in the remastered format. That also includes the original as broadcast episodes. So you can watch either of those ways. It's up on Netflix and also Amazon Prime. And also on StarTrek.com, which may or may not have ads. So if you are watching on a format that does make you stop to watch ads, you'll just have to pause us while you watch the commercial.
Yeah, we are watching a Blu-ray edition. So
yeah. So basically every week, before we get started with the episode, me and you will catch up a little bit and see if we have anything we want to talk about. And then we'll get right into the episode. But I think before we do that, did I give the episode synopsis yet?
No, I don't think you did.
All right. Well, let me do that then. The Man Trap. A mysterious creature stalks the Enterprise, murdering crew members. So that's what we have to look forward to. And so what do you have to look forward to in general, Jeff?
I really enjoy this episode. I think it's a pretty cool intro to the series, even though it kind of dumps you in with not much. But I think it's got an interesting monster. A good way to kick it off. Some cool moments with the crew. Suspense, some love interest for McCoy, stuff like that. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah. And speaking of monsters, I am finally tomorrow going to see Pacific Rim.
Oh, geez. Finally, huh?
Well, I was waiting for it to get to the point where I could use a free pass for it.
Ah, understood. Yeah, I think we'll be skipping that one.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm a big Godzilla fan. I know you are, too.
Yes, I am.
And I got to tell you, I read very little about this movie, and it wasn't for lack of trying. It's just, you know, I didn't really, you know, see a lot of commercials for it. I'm not sure I ever saw a full trailer in the theater for it. So I don't really have much of an idea of what I'm going into, except that it's big monsters versus big man-made robots.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much got it nailed down.
I'm kind of looking forward to it. I mean, if I was anxiously awaiting it, I would have been there opening day and not waited until I could use a free pass. But I'm sure we'll catch up next episode and I could possibly tell you if it's worth seeing, if we remember to talk about that.
I'm sure we will. I think last weekend, I think both of us saw The Wolverine.
Yes.
Yeah, that turned out to be better than I had expected.
Yeah, you know what? It was one of those things where anytime you go in and you see that it's the Fox version of a Marvel movie, you figure they're going to go very, very, you know, sort of corny at points. And this movie was really kind of neat in the fact that it was kind of a little more subdued than some of the other Marvel movies. It had some really, really cool action scenes.
It did.
The ending got kind of cartoony.
It did.
And also, I think we both talked about this offline. It was about 20 minutes too long.
Yeah, I think I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, since it is still in the theaters. But there seemed to be some dragging in the middle for me. There was a point where, you know, Wolverine and one of the other characters were kind of off by themselves for what seemed to be quite a long time, and it wasn't objectionable, but it did seem to drag out a little bit. But I thought the story felt more mature than a typical X-Men film, especially some of the other Origins films that had come out.
Yeah.
So I was very pleasantly surprised with how seriously the movie took itself. And it had some really great Asian culture in there. I thought that was wonderful that they, they really preserved a lot of the, the culture, and they didn't kind of dumb anything down.
Yeah, yeah, and it has that really, really great sort of midway through the credits scene as well.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure you stay at least partway through the credits.
So that's cool. And you know what? I got to tell you, this summer, I can't really remember a lot of movies that I was excited for.
Yeah, me neither, come to think of it. There's a couple that I wanted to see. I was pretty excited for Man of Steel, but not as excited as I had thought I was going to be. I think I was more excited before I saw several of the trailers, and I wasn't sure how I was going to feel. I'm a big Superman fan, but
yeah.
I definitely wasn't as amped as I had thought I was going to be. Star Trek, I was very amped for, of course. But other than that, I don't think there was anything I was super, super excited for. Maybe Despicable Me 2, I was.
Yeah, I know you were a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, it might have been Fast and Furious 6.
Of course.
And This Is the End, which turned out to be about as good as I thought it was going to be. I mean, anytime you get that cast of people together. Mm-hmm. That are really good at improvising the way they do, you know you're going to get a couple of laughs.
Yeah, yeah. I think we discussed that, and we sort of had a little bit of a gap between us on that one. But
Yeah, I think that's a movie that is going to age really well. I think it's one of those ones that you'll catch on TV 2 years from now and find yourself really, really laughing. But one thing we won't be laughing at is this episode, because it's very serious. So are you ready to talk about The Man Trap?
Yes, sir.
All right, perfect. So we will start our commentary in 3, 2, 1.
All right, welcome to The Man Trap.
Yeah, it's interesting. We get a captain's log, but then we get somebody else in the captain's chair.
Yeah, the first official characters you see, any fan saw, was Spock and Uhura and a random red shirt sitting at the Sulu position. And we have the captain and McCoy beaming down with a random blue shirt. Blue shirt.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about this episode is I'm not sure how it flew in the 60s when it aired, but this was not the first episode filmed, even after the aborted pilot that was The Cage.
Yep.
So this was, I believe, sixth in the production order.
Fifth or sixth.
Yeah.
One of the two.
And for whatever reason, they decided to run it. It gives no introduction to the to the crew, what they're doing, who's who. I mean, I'd imagine nowadays you couldn't really lay this on an audience and expect the show to succeed.
Yeah, probably not. Interestingly enough, the cast themselves, this was not one of their favorites. And they really didn't want to broadcast this one first, but the network actually chose this episode first because they wanted an episode that had some adventure to draw in an audience. They wanted something that wasn't completely set on the ship,
yeah,
as some of the other episodes were. So they opted for this episode first. So you had a taste of the science fiction, and you had a little monster action going on.
Oh, yeah.
So it was interesting. And this episode is also interesting from another standpoint, is they don't do a lot of romance in this series for McCoy.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes this an interesting angle for this episode. So what would viewers get from this as being the first episode, having no background on any of these characters?
Yeah.
You know, what would you walk away with this being the first episode?
That you're going to see in a show every week where a lot of crew members die.
Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, interesting, you got the bit here where McCoy sees her as a younger woman, but when the angle shifts and you see Kirk's perspective, she looks a bit older, like what her normal age would have been.
Yeah, and then the crew member sees a blonde woman that he saw off on another planet on some shore leave. So this is our first indication that there's something not quite right going on here.
Yeah, the crewman is being admonished. Random crewman X is being admonished by Kirk,
yeah,
and McCoy, and being sent off. Interesting, though, that he is in a blue shirt, and I don't think he winds up making it off the planet unscathed.
No. One of the things I really like about this episode, not to get ahead of myself here, is sort of the playful nature of Kirk throughout the episode.
Yeah.
There are a handful of times, and I'm sure we'll point him out, where he smirks or he tells a little joke, or he just seems a little bit more playful than he did as the series progressed.
Yeah, he does. And it's funny because this, like we were saying before, this isn't the first episode that was filmed. So you would think that the Kirk character would have had a little bit of time to gel, but maybe that just happens to be the way the script had been written in this first batch. And here we see our crewman X being lured away by the blonde bombshell from the other planet.
And that brings us to our opening titles.
And we do get the space, the final frontier monologue. The Voyages of the Starship Enterprise. So you get the boilerplate.
I guess this is really all a viewer would need to know, going into the series. But it still feels very, very weird as a first episode.
It certainly does. I guess this is one of the things where you have to realize the politics that go on between the creators of a show and the network that the show is being broadcast on. So, you know, Roddenberry had to make a few concessions to the network, and you'll see as the season goes on, there's some fairly major concessions he had to make to the network. So some of them had a fairly good impact on the show itself and the overall direction that certain characters were supposed to take. Mm-hmm. So we've got the ship orbiting around. So we've got a shot of the planet's surface here. Very rocky, sandy, a lot of ruins there. And a temple shot here with a little ruined temple.
And this would sort of give an indication of what the away missions would look like. It was very rare that they would shoot on location.
Yep.
So this was, I guess, a viewer's first indication that, you know, when they were on planet or on an away mission, that they would be on a set.
Yeah, very few actual outdoor sets. These were all sort of... kind of makeshift indoor sets. Some of them have been doctored up in the remastered editions as well, so they don't look exactly... We are watching the remastered edition of this episode, by the way. So things are a little bit prettied up in some places. Oh, here we have Dr. Crater here. Yeah. I always thought it was kind of funny his name was Dr. Crater.
Yeah.
And he was examining these ancient ruins. I'm sure Dr. Crater examined a few craters while he was out there.
Yeah, and he's demanding extra provisions of salt. Mm. They need salt. It's him and his wife are the only two people on planet. And salt is a requirement.
Yeah, and it's a nice guise here. A nice active subterfuge, because it's pretty convincing if you're on an arid, hot planet. You would need that salt to help retain water. So it's pretty plausible that he may want this water. So, you know, you might not think anything of it.
Mm-hmm. And here we get a pretty cool sort of indication of what medicine is like in the future, that is Star Trek. You have McCoy using a combination of technology that we can't understand, you know, with his tricorder and that scanner. But then he also will move along to just a tongue depressor to look at Dr. Crater's tonsils, I guess. And I think it's really cool, because one thing that McCoy will do as the series goes on is especially with some of the time travel episodes, is he'll talk about how primitive, you know, medicine was at the particular date that they're at. But so it's kind of neat here to see the futuristic take on how a doctor might examine a patient, but also has sort of that classic, exam that we've all sort of been a part of as well.
Yeah, I also like the fact that putting this in the frame of mind of being the first episode that people in the 60s saw. This was their first introduction to Star Trek. So they had no they had no explanation as to what these medical devices were. They were just meant to accept that medicine had changed so much in the future that now we had – oh, here was the tongue depressor part. So medicine hasn't completely changed, but you still have a this alien-looking box that we'll come to find out as a tricorder and this other little scanner that I guess are working in tandem wirelessly. So we have the introduction to wireless technology. Here we see
that crew member you were talking about, in fact, did not make it off planet. Nancy is there. Did she witness it? Is she just discovering him?
The green pod pulled from his mouth. Of course, Monster Nancy has planted that in his mouth to make it look like something had poisoned
him. Like he'd eaten a fruit or a berry or some kind of alien plant.
Yeah, and now, of course, Dr. Crater himself is siding with his wife's estimation of what happened. You know, admonishing Kirk and McCoy for bringing down a crewman who obviously didn't know he wasn't supposed to eat the local flora. Shame on them.
Yes. And while we're setting things up here, we can, I think, briefly mention the writer and director of this episode. It was written by George Clayton Johnson, who has a lot of credits that we've probably all known. He's co-writer of the novel Logan's Run, and he also wrote 8 different episodes of The Twilight Zone. So he was definitely kind of the go-to guy, it seems like, in the 60s for fantasy or science fiction. And, of course, he wrote this episode, which was the first aired episode of the series. He also wrote a story that was used for Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Director Mark Daniels is kind of interesting. He died in 1989, but he sort of became one of the pioneers of live television. Along with his cinematographer, Carl Freund, he's been credited with introducing the 3-camera technique. Oh. Prior to that, they were using 1 camera.
Very cool.
He directed a ton of TV shows in the 50s and 60s, including I Love Lucy, Hogan's Heroes. And he also directed dozens of episodes of Star Trek. Yeah. And he also wrote one of the animated series episodes that we'll talk about when we get to it. So some very talented and, I guess, busy gentlemen working behind the scenes on this episode.
Yeah, another also directing an I Love Lucy episode is a little tie into Desilu production. Being the production company involved. Here we see Spock again sitting in the captain's chair talking with Uhura.
Yeah, we get a little bit of, like, playful flirtation on Uhura's part. You know, she's really trying to get a read on Spock, it seems. You know, and I think this is good for the viewer as well, because we're not entirely sure at this point if Spock's just a dick or we don't really know anything about Vulcans yet.
Yeah, we're exploring a little bit of Spock's logical nature here. And, you know, Uhura just said she's an illogical lady, so she's trying to elicit some sort of emotional description of Vulcan from him, I guess as a point of reference for herself as she's learning a little bit about Spock himself. But it's a good thing for the viewers, I think, that even though this wasn't necessarily what the cast would have wanted to be the first broadcast episode, that there is still quite a lot of character development that's done in this episode. It's one of the reasons why I like this episode quite a bit as well. Because you see the personalities and how they interact with each other, and you're getting a little glimpse of what Spock does when he's left in command of the ship.
Yeah, and here the bridge just learned that they were beaming back to the ship with 1 dead crew member. Uhura seems kind of taken aback that Spock shows no indication that he's worried that it might be the captain. You know, which is a little, you know, further insight into the Spock character. And also, we would learn as the series goes on that there's many times where, you know, Kirk is presumed dead and Spock's ready to just move along, even though him and Kirk are friends.
But he's always happy to see him still alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So no surprise there. Spock is fallible emotionally here and there, but, you know, when he needs to put duty above emotion, he seems to have no problem doing that. His logical nature helps quite a bit.
So here we have McCoy basically coming to the conclusion that the crew member was not poisoned.
Yep, yep.
And that there's really no reason that he should be dead.
But we still don't know what really caused it. The jury is still out on that, and McCoy seems to be having a tough time. And they're starting to examine Dr. Crater's wife, Nancy, and McCoy is questioning himself and how he saw her and how she doesn't look a day over the last time he saw her. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to get a little more inkling here that something's definitely amiss. And McCoy's a little offended that Kirk didn't think she was any great shakes. Another captain's log. Planet M13. This is interesting, too, that early on they didn't really name the planets as they did in future episodes. So this is just a nondescript planet with a single letter and a number. So I guess we're supposed to take from that there are at least 113 planets in the M category, wherever they happen to be. Mm-hmm.
Well, the other interesting thing, too, is any planet that they could beam down to and breathe the atmosphere, which seemed like just about every planet they would beam down to, it would have a Class M designation.
Yeah, so breathable atmosphere, right? Oh, here there, Spock is digging up some information on the Borgia plant, trying to figure out if that's poisonous enough to have killed the officer and given him the model marks on his face that we saw. Mm-hmm. We still don't know exactly.
And we learned that they've been down on that planet for 5 years.
Something's going on in medical. McCoy's paging Kirk.
And he's got a discovery that he'd rather talk about in person. He doesn't want it broadcast over the bridge.
Little glance of concern from Uhura again. Yep. And here we see yet another interesting medical device that's unexplained. Yes. We'll see this device many times throughout the series, but we see a group of bars and one indicator is high, the rest of them are low. I guess we're supposed to accept the fact that that's some sort of a medical diagnostic device telling us vital signs.
Yeah, and we learn that he basically has no salt in his body. Mm-hmm. His body is devoid of salt.
Mm-hmm. And put two and two together, and they're asking for salt tablets down on the planet there. So something's quite amiss here. So McCoy is a little upset with himself. Yeah, Kirk's putting two and two together here. Salt tablets. Yeah. Now we're going to get a landing party. And this, I think, is another reason why this episode is essential. And it's actually another benefit of it being first is that it establishes right off the bat the red shirt theory.
Okay.
Of not beaming down in your red shirts, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just go down to a planet as a no-name person. Actually, it doesn't even matter the color of your shirt sometimes. So you got some yellow shirt guys and blue shirt guys. So they're all really expendable. So you have these guys down here who are just going to be kind of disposed of in various different places. And Nancy, of course, is missing currently. We don't know where she is. And Crater just wants them out of there.
Yeah, and it's just interesting here watching it. If you're watching it for the first time, you're kind of trying to figure out why Dr. Crater is being so deceptive. You know, as the episode unfolds, you know, in retrospect, you understand it, but it's really, really adds to sort of the suspense or the, you know, what the F is going on here, you know, feel of this episode, because if there was something going on, you'd think Dr. Crater would just come out and say it instead of dancing around it. And understandably, you'd think he'd want to protect his wife. But at the same time, if she was sick, you'd think he'd want her taken care of.
True, true. But also, because they've been there for so long, maybe he's developed more of a hermit-like lifestyle and just doesn't take well to people coming in and asking him for things and wanting to examine him. And here we see an oddly shaped glass container with a few salt tablets in it. Kirk's going to check just to make sure they're actually salt tablets.
Yeah, they started with 25 pounds.
Pounds. Pounds, baby. Pounds.
And now they're reduced to what looks like what could probably fit in a Tic Tac container.
Yeah, it's a shame. They must have... I guess you could try to extrapolate just how much the Nancy monster needs to survive if she's going through... They went through 25 pounds of salt and, you know, four or five Enterprise crew members in the span of an hour here. So she must be... And there's a lot of salt in the human body. So if she's taking every grain of salt out of your body, that's quite a bit.
Yeah, I also think it might also be based on the monster probably has a fixed need. You know, like a base operating level, if you will. And here we discover our second dead crew member. And a third. I think as the series goes along, we might be able to track it. And he's trying to lure her out with some salt.
He's luring her in with the salt. So now we definitely know there's something not right.
Yeah. But this might have the highest body count out of any episode I can think of.
It's pretty high. It's pretty high.
I mean, not counting ships that blow up or anything like that.
Now, that obviously looks like a wall to me in the background there, yeah. That orange. I mean, it's a good disguise. I mean, you know, if you just glance at it, you're not paying attention. It does kind of look like an orangey pink sky, but the more you stare at it.
Yeah. And that's kind of, it's kind of neat in the sense that they didn't go out of control with the effects when they remastered these episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know that
very tasteful.
Gene Roddenberry was always asking what more they could do to improve the, you know, the original series. And here we notice that Nancy is now a shapeshifter.
Yes.
So we've added another level of mystery.
Yeah. I suppose that she needs to at least see, does she need to make contact with someone to be able to assume their form?
I don't think so. 'Cause I know that she takes quite a few forms, and we'll have to track whether she actually interacts with them or not.
Yeah.
But then she also takes random shapes later on when she sees Uhura. She takes the shape of that Swahili gentleman.
Yeah, so maybe she doesn't even need to see somebody. She can just kind of imagine a shape that she wants to take and take it.
Mm-hmm. So now there's some serious concern that nobody knows where Nancy is. McCoy's really, really hot and kind of agitated that Kirk is saying, hey, we got to beam back up. You know, we'll be able to scan for her when we get up to the ship, but get it together, man. We're on a mission here but we have a crew to worry about.
And I think you might be seeing, this is just a theory, but you might be seeing here, since Nancy has metamorphosized into crewman green and is witnessing McCoy's concern for her well-being, and she's finding herself less in need of Dr. Crater and more willing to forego being with him and transfer herself over to McCoy, as she becomes more of a motherly, caring figure to him very shortly here. Mm-hmm. And her concern is less about Crater himself. So she might have been looking for a way off the planet, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that one, but it could be. Because she is the last of her kind, as we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. This episode overall kind of reminds me of two things. Mm. Obviously, the movie Alien, which sort of has a people on a ship being pursued by an alien.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the movie The Thing, either the John Carpenter version from the early 80s or the 50s version, The Thing from Another another world.
And here's our introduction to one of the greatest hairdos of 60s science fiction.
Yes, Yeoman Rand. And you notice she's got salt right there, and she's...
Yep. The interesting factoid about Yeoman Rand is that originally the vision for her character originally was to be more active in the series. She was actually supposed to be like a leading lady in the series and be Kirk's sort of love interest. But that was one of the concessions that Roddenberry had to make with Desilu. They wanted Kirk to be more of that space Casanova, James Bond type character where he's having love affairs with different women. So they wound up writing her out and excluding her from all of the things that she was originally supposed to be included in. So there's quite a few interviews with her where she expresses her displeasure at the change in direction of that character.
Yeah, but you almost have to agree with the Desilu side of things in the sense that...
Oh, absolutely do.
You know, even as a character, you don't think Kirk would... as a captain, sort of allow himself to get emotionally invested with somebody on that level.
And on his own ship, under his own command as well. I think even regulation would probably forbid something like that. And here's our introduction to Sulu.
Yeah, who at this point is just the ship's botanist. I mean,
he's
obviously not the helmsman.
I was kind of wondering, do we ever see Sulu's garden again? You know, with the hand plant?
Not that I can recall.
Yeah.
And it's funny, they have a whole debate on whether the plant's a he or a she. And
quite interesting. Here's Sulu eating some vegetables and also some nondescript colored cubes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not the first time we'll see strange food being consumed on the Enterprise. And here's Nancy / Crewman Green looking for... And he just happens to find his way into Sulu's garden. The interesting that they've got that brown swash where his phaser is mounted on his belt. Later on, I don't recall seeing the black pants.
And yeah.
The phasers just stick there. But he's got kind of a white stitched leather-ish looking belt here.
Yeah, almost like the futuristic version of a holster.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. And the plant
knows something's amiss.
Yep. And Sulu is a bit concerned. He's never seen the plant act this way before, and I guess patting the plant is enough to calm it down. So it's sentient. It's a sentient plant. Yeah, this is an interesting looking plant.
Yeah.
So here we are. Green is out in the hallway again. Apparently in need of salt. He's looking quite distressed. So I guess his salt supply is running low.
Mm-hmm. And he's fed twice already. Since they initially beamed back down to the planet. Right.
Oh, here comes the Uhura. Yep, and here he's going to...
you get a nice morph effect into the ladies' man.
Yes.
Tim Meadows. No.
The Swahili gentleman that Uhura doesn't ever recall seeing before, but also looks familiar at the same time.
Yeah.
Here we are.
And it almost seems like he's got, or the creature... has sort of a hypnotic ability, if you will.
Yeah, almost vampiric in a way. Mm-hmm. So the salt vampire. But notice that the creature morphed into a guy wearing a non-standard uniform. It's almost as if he's wearing the same type of a blue smock-like uniform that the doctor wore in the pilot episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now he's speaking to Uhura in Swahili, which impresses her. Mm-hmm. And also makes you wonder, even after the episode ends, the extent of the salt creature's powers. Is it somehow reading Uhura's mind? Or does it have an endless, vocabulary in terms of being able to speak in multiple alien languages? It raises a lot of questions that, we'll never really get the answer to.
Yeah, well, it looks as if it's got at least some basic predatory powers where it's able to somehow either not completely immobilize, but it distract its prey enough where it can pounce. But apparently its hold wasn't strong enough as it was Yeoman Rand came out of a doorway and distracted Uhura enough so that she was able to get away. So here's another interesting factoid about this episode. I believe that this episode is the only time you ever get to see the interior of Dr. McCoy's quarters.
Okay.
So this is McCoy out of uniform, in bed clothes, I suppose, in his own quarters, where we'll see Nancy come in shortly.
Yeah. And there was a little joke from Kirk, you know, saying, oh, you can't sleep, take one of those red pills that you gave me last week. And just the way he delivers it has like sort of a playful, you know, tone to it. Here's a guy, it looks like he's getting ready to, I guess, be put in the oven as a baked potato.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks it looks almost like maybe a radiation suit of some kind. Definitely wasn't a space suit. So here's Kirk eating these square, almost plastic-looking bits of food. I wonder what those actually were made of.
Yeah, did they have like I guess the gummy technology back in the '60s, like the you know what do they call that? Whatever those gummy candies are.
Sour Patch Kids? No.
Sure, without the sour. The sour.
Yeah, who knows what they were? Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably some gelatinous mixture there, a confection candy type thing, saltwater taffy. Mm-hmm. Ah, and Nancy has now found McCoy's quarters and will promptly shape shift into a familiar form.
Yeah, and the actress who plays Nancy Crater is Jean Ball, who died in 1996. She did a ton of TV work in the 60s, shows including I Spy, McHale's Navy, Perry Mason, The Fugitive, Wagon Train, which Gene Roddenberry called Star Trek a wagon train to the stars, and also Bonanza.
Wow.
You know, quite a busy actress in the 60s.
She's got quite a body of work there. So here we see Nancy cozying up to Dr. McCoy. Strange, but her husband is still alive, so I guess this is her transitioning from one protector to another.
Yeah,
and she's lulling him into his previous state, you know, as his former deep love interest from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So she's taking advantage of his affections for her, mm-hmm. and he's revealed that Kirk wants him to take the sleeping pills, and she's encouraging him to do so that he falls asleep.
And we have a dead crew member.
Poor guy. It's a suck to die in an outfit like that. Yep. And Yeoman Rand is looking a little stunned. And Sulu just walking around the ship.
Yeah, right. And he got right down to business. He knew the protocol.
He did. Didn't really help, but he knew the protocol. Yep.
Another captain's log update.
So we've moved 0.4 mm-hmm. on the star date mm-hmm. here. And we see Nancy taking care of McCoy.
And as we'll see, basically she wants McCoy indisposed so she can take his form and really, be able to move around sort of undetected.
Yeah. So we're gonna see that happen very shortly here, and we're gonna go through a quite an interesting sequence coming up, where a major decision or a change in the way the creature was eventually treated, could have been made had different heads prevailed in the discussion here. So we're going to see Nancy needs some more salt, apparently. She got a little bit off of his forehead, but doesn't want to kill him, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the international symbol for I need salt, apparently.
Yes.
Biting her knuckle.
And every actor did a pretty good job of syncing that up and making it look consistent as being from one being.
Yeah, here we go. So now she's assumed the form of Dr. McCoy, and is going to pass herself off as the doctor to Captain Kirk as she's being called to the bridge. Extra captain's log. Talking about all the people getting slaughtered. So the body count continues to rise.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to count, but I lost count at this point. Are we at four?
Wait a minute.
The baked potato guy was four?
Was he five? Now, perhaps he was four. Oh, so now we see Dr. Crater.
Yeah.
He's hunkered down behind a giant boulder. And he's threatening. So here we go. What Dr. Crater is wielding a phaser from the pilot.
Yes.
Which I thought was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So he's got an older model phaser with the rotating muzzle on it there to change the setting from stun to kill.
From the original pilot, the cage.
Right. The original pilot, the cage, yes. Not from Where No Man Has Gone Before. But Barnhart was found dead on deck 9. Same symptoms. And now they're going to stumble upon the real crewman Green. Spock is going to stumble onto him. And now we're going to figure out that Nancy is, in fact, a shapeshifter.
Or they're going to get an indication of that.
Yeah, they're going to get an indication that... Kirk's going to put it together here. Kirk and Spock are going to figure this out. That whatever beamed up was not crewman Green. Something did.
Yes, Spock gets that kind of ominous line.
Mm-hmm. He delivers a lot of those over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They did a good job of spraying the actors down to make it seem like it was really hot, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
They're quite shiny. But Kirk's hair is perfect as always. Yeah.
And that's another thing you wonder, if that detail was even necessary in the 60s with people watching TVs on, 19-inch screens, sometimes in black and white.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you notice... there's a mixture of uniforms here too. Mm-hmm. So you see some of the older style uniforms walking around, and you see some of these newer style shirts with the black collars.
Yeah.
And we do have the ranks already on the sleeves though.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really explained, but Kirk has three, Spock has two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Crater just took a pot shot. That was actually a nice effect as the column got partially destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Crater seems a little off his rocker at this point.
Yeah, and Spock's doing the military crawl. See, he's got a death wish. He doesn't care anymore.
Yeah. But thankfully, the Star Trek technology, the phasers have different settings, and they have the stun setting, which will come in handy in a couple seconds. Yeah.
Oh,
here.
And Spock is asking why Kirk wants to risk his life for this. But they're gonna hatch a plan here, and Spock's gonna military crawl backwards again. So obviously combat training taking effect there.
Mm-hmm. And let's real quick talk about Professor Crater.
Sure.
Actor Alfred Ryder, who died in 1995. Mm. Over the course of his career, he starred in appeared in over 100 TV shows.
Wow.
Including The Untouchables, Dr. Kildare, The Outer Limits, again, Wagon Train, Gunsmoke, The $6 Million Man, and Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Wow, quite a bit of sci-fi there for Dr. Crater.
Yeah, it almost seems like possibly after Star Trek, that was sort of the role the agents would call him for that type of work. He is mostly known for the role of Professor Crater.
Wow, interesting facts. Mm-hmm. I always find it fascinating how many actors and actresses did one or two episodes of this show and that show. And I always find it interesting back then how many actors would show up on shows that you would catch here and there, and it would kind of surprise you and say, hey, oh, I didn't realize this person was here. That person was there. It's pretty cool stuff.
All right. So here we have Professor Crater's got, he's completely outmatched here. You've got two Starfleet officers who have been trained to basically disable threats, if you will. So
that was a great crawl by Kirk. Yeah. I love that. That was great. And they're going to catch him in the crossfire here. Yeah. And they've also got communicators, of course.
Yeah. Professor Crater, I can't imagine anybody would have put their money on him.
Hmm. You know, I thinking back on when this show was originally broadcast,
and boom,
some of this
gotcha.
Technology,
yeah,
some of this technology had to be mind blowing.
Oh, sure.
You know, communicators mm-hmm. like that had to be, and those the phaser handguns.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that?
Yeah, and one interesting thing here is they really had the phaser on a very low stun setting because Crater was pretty much disabled for seconds.
Yeah, and his voice got a little bit altered too in this scene. He's talking with a little bit of a filter on because he was dazed.
Yeah, and getting back to the technology, it was interesting how you mentioned now when we watch this, the idea of a communicator isn't that far fetched. You know, we're sitting here with cell phones,
and smartphones, and yeah, we essentially have better technology in our pockets than they had in the future.
Yeah, although we can't communicate over subspace frequencies yet.
Not
at least
yet.
Here on Earth.
Not yet. Cellular frequencies, yes, but not cellular frequencies, but megahertz and gigahertz.
So now Crater's sort of giving us a hint as to what is going on. He tells a story about the buffalo and how it was slowly sort of, you know, its numbers were slowly whittled down.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that, you know, we hear that this is the last of its kind.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's, despite Starfleet regulation, there's no onus to try to capture it and save it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is suggested later that you know, the creature could be peaceful if properly fed.
Mm-hmm.
But Kirk... But ultimately, Kirk wants it dead.
Yeah, but ultimately, to what end? I mean, it doesn't seem like in its natural state it can really communicate. So you're constantly on a feeding schedule where you're just making sure it gets salt. They're in a tough spot here because you can't leave it behind on the planet because there's nobody on the planet. The thing will die. You can't really take it with you.
Sure, you could. They've got a brig. They could lock that sucker up. Just throw some salt tablets in there every now and then.
Yeah. Thankfully, as we see at the end of the episode, their hand is forced, and
nobody has
to make the hard decision as to what to do with it.
Nobody's got to roll the hard six on this one. They just take them out in an epic fight scene, by the way, which I can't wait to talk about.
So we get more Captain's Log.
Yeah.
And, you know, now everybody's fully aware that there is a creature loose on board.
Yeah.
The ship's pretty much in almost lockdown, except for security personnel.
Yeah, we see the lighting has changed. It's very dramatic. We see McCoy finally starting to toss and turn a little there.
Yeah, loaded up on those
loaded
sleeping
up on
pills,
meds,
man.
Yeah, and here's Dr. Crater and Monster McCoy, and they're discussing the creature and how they're going to try to catch it.
Yeah, and it almost seems like Crater kind of realizes that it's McCoy. He, I think, you know, having spent enough time with it, it just seemed to me like Crater sort of had a, you know, an inkling, you know, based on his mannerisms and
and
the way he was talking.
Kirk's going to ask him flat out in a minute or two here if he can identify the creature in any form.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently he can. So, and here's the creature itself.
Basically pleading its case.
Pleading its case. And no one gives a damn.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, shut up. We're going
to
kill you.
I mean, really, at this point, there are close to a half dozen crew members dead.
Mm-hmm.
Which this show, as we talked about, really wasn't known for high body counts.
No.
So, you know, Kirk can't really take something like that lightly.
And here we go. McCoy somehow seems to have a deep insight. And Spock's calling him out on the intercom. He's the very interesting hypothesis you have there, Doctor.
Yeah.
And the halls are sealed off. Here's Sulu on a screen here.
Yeah. You almost have to wonder what the creature's end game was as well. Did it want to get off the Enterprise to a planet that was fully inhabited? You know, like,
well,
or was it just so blinded by its need for salt, it didn't care, and it figured, oh, it'll take a while for me to exhaust the crew of the Enterprise.
I guess you would have to try to follow it to its logical conclusion. I'm imagining if the creature is arguing that it's intelligent and that it can be reasoned with, and all it needs is food, that maybe the creature itself is suggesting that it would like to coexist, and maybe it would eventually find its way to another planet. But I don't know. I question whether or not the creature is actually evil. I think it's just trying to survive, man.
Well, I think you have to sort of equate it to dealing with a person who's really, really severely strung out on drugs. You know, they'll say and do anything to get that next fix. And that's sort of how I see the salt, you know, creature operating.
Yeah. Well, here's Crater talking about how he almost killed it.
Mm-hmm.
By saving, and here's Kirk telling him he's too noble, and the thing becomes the wife, lover, best friend, wise man, fool, idol, slave. Yeah, I don't necessarily think that was the relationship that they had, but I think it was more of a cooperative relationship. Yeah, I think Kirk's a little too headstrong on this one.
Yeah, but also you can sort of see Crater sort of developing this sort of Stockholm syndrome where, you know, he starts to sympathize with his captor, if you will. And also it's able to take the form of his wife, too, which even though he knows it's not her, as we'll see later with McCoy, you know, knowing, but still you're seeing that person in front of you, it's still hard to sort of make the hard decisions.
Sure. And they're going to administer a drug to Dr. Crater in order to try to make him talk. And Spock seems to be very willing to participate in this. Mm-hmm. He's going to help. And here's another shot of the ship. You know, I really like... the more I watch these remastered episodes, the more I enjoy these effects. I always find them very tasteful.
I was going to use that word as well.
Really made an effort to make them not look
cartoony
or removed from the show in such a way that it's obvious. So I think, and actually I've had some experience with this, showing some of these episodes to somebody who had never really watched them before. They didn't detect it right away until I told them that the effects were added after, and they were surprised. Like, wow, really? That's pretty impressive. So up and we see Crater himself is dead.
Yeah, and Spock was attacked, and we learn that Spock's makeup is not the same as humans, so the creature was not able to drain him the way it did other people.
Yeah, and we saw a little green blood on his forehead as well. So you get a lot of information in this show, this particular episode, about the characters. And now here's Nancy pleading for help.
She's basically waking McCoy up. He's in a confused state already, and she's saying they're trying to kill me.
And this scene to me makes the episode. I think you see a lot of great exchange between these characters, and you see the passion that McCoy has. You see how emotional and headstrong he can be. And you see Kirk taking the hard line here.
Who gave the line of four crewmen. So,
So I guess we have a four-man body count.
Yeah, at some point our body count.
Well, and Crater is five then.
Okay, yeah.
So Crater's five.
Yeah. Well, I guess, he's not a crewman. So now Kirk is sort of taunting Nancy with the salt.
Yeah, McCoy's not too happy about this. And he's trying to protect her.
Yeah, McCoy can't let those feelings go.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't want to believe the truth.
Yep. And here, Kirk, I think this is a great scene to establish Kirk. And a little fight between the doctor and Kirk.
And she's got the salt fix, and now she needs more.
And I think this here is proof positive that she has some sort of a paralyzing ability.
Yeah.
Because she's got Kirk
in a trance of some sort.
Yep. And here comes Spock showing some motion.
Yeah. They shoot it. Yeah, they're fighting over the tricorder. And Spock.
Oh. Here's a great double axe handles to the face. And a creature who can handle the strength of Spock is pretty tough.
Yeah.
And she just backhands him right into the wall.
And Spock really sells it. He's sitting there with his eyes open, like, great stunt. Oh, man.
is that Nancy Duncan? Then Bones can finally see that that might not be who he thinks it is. And she's going back in for the kill. I think we're going to get a really good Shatner scream here in a second. Yeah. This is classic Shatner. And the creature finally reveals itself.
With that gas mask-like visage.
All that work to make that costume, and it gets about a minute of screen time.
Yeah.
Up, and there's the suction cup. So now we know what makes those mottled. Here's the Shatner scream.
And boom.
And boom. Last of its kind. Done.
Kirk really selling the injury to the face.
Yep. Yeah. And this won't be the first time that Kirk almost dies.
Turns back into Nancy.
Oh, to give him the last twist of the knife. Now you really did it. Now you're going to have to live with this.
Yeah, here's a big, big McCoy moment.
Yep.
He asks for forgiveness.
And
boom,
does
that's
her
it.
In. And a great dramatic fall. Mm-hmm. I can see the chalk outline getting drawn right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. And there it is in the salt form. Mm-hmm. So now as this episode is winding down, I guess it's time to talk or discuss whether we think this is an essential episode in terms of, you know, people are getting into Star Trek and whether this is an episode they need to watch.
Yes.
So what's your take on how essential this episode is?
Well, I think revisiting some of my comments that I made throughout the episode, I'm probably not going to come to much of a surprise to anybody that I consider this episode essential watching for a lot of reasons. One, first and foremost, number one is there's a lot of great character development in this episode. There's a lot of great definition going on, at least for the major three characters, for the Trinity of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. You see this friendship here, especially at the end of this episode here. You see the three of them talking. Kirk's getting contemplative, so you're seeing a little more. He's not just a headstrong military guy. He also has a heart.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, you know, McCoy has come to grips with what's happened. He's calmed down, but you've also seen how emotional and passionate he can get.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen quite a bit of Spock.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a lot of good information about those three characters.
And we noticed Sulu with the helms there, by the way.
And Sulu is at the helm. Yeah. So he's part-time botanist, part-time helmsman.
Yeah.
So, but you also got a little bit of a taste of Uhura and her role on the show and her personality. And you got a little bit of Sulu in there as well. So what you're really missing was there was no appearance of Scotty in this episode.
Yeah.
But from a character development perspective, I think it's essential watching. Also, I think it's a good episode to watch for the creature.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the memorable and iconic Star Trek creatures.
Yeah.
There's several more, but I think if you talk to Star Trek fans and ask them what some of their favorite costumes and creatures were, this would definitely be one of them.
Yeah.
And I think that about wraps it up as far as why I think it's essential, but I definitely think it's essential.
Yeah, I don't really have to echo what you said. This is definitely an essential episode, in my opinion, just based on the character moments alone.
Mm.
And that brings us to the end of the episode. So we hope you enjoyed watching The Man Trap with us, and we will talk to you next time.
Take it easy. Thanks for listening.
You bleed too much, Crater. You're too pure and noble.
You saving the last of its kind, or has this become Crater's private heaven? Here on this planet, this thing becomes wife, lover, best friend, wise man, fool, idol, slave. Isn't a bad life to have everyone in the universe at your beck and call, and you win all the arguments.